A couple of recent events, one national, one local, are the genesis of this sermon. Although I probably should say that one was a non-event and one was a tragic event, that those are what birthed these words. And perhaps once you consider the same incidents, you'll have some of the same thoughts that I have. First, the national non-event. As most of you are probably aware, non-believers and quite a few Christians too had a field day as May 21st approached. They had a field day because a gentleman named Harold Camping, an aging preacher who's got a great voice but not so great theology, was predicting the rapture on that Saturday. And ignoring the fact that I don't even think the rapture itself is a biblical concept as it's taught in the modern church, the fact is he predicted a date of Jesus' return at that point for us Christians, but it's something that you can imagine what happened after. Well, let me ask you this. Has there been a sudden increase in missing persons reports? Anybody you know disappeared unexpectedly beside you in bed? So not only was there a field day ahead of it, there was a field day after it. And the reality is the lack of missing person reports proves that he was wrong. And even Mr. Camping himself will admit he was wrong. Although, has anybody heard what he says he was wrong about? Was he wrong about the date? No. He was just wrong because he misunderstood. He thought it was going to be something physical, and actually it was just the spiritual beginning of Judgment Day. And he also said something about how God, because, and we wouldn't disagree with this, is merciful and compassionate, that he didn't go ahead and go through the tribulation. But he is guaranteeing, and he's sticking by, the complete end of the world is going to be October 21st, which, if you want to check your calendars, is a Friday. And I can tell you right now that I just can't wait for the ridicule that will lead up to those weeks, just like they did these weeks, because implicitly or explicitly, we fellow Christians, or although I don't know if I can say that, I can't say to Mr. Camping's thing, but Christians get lumped in with Camping. For instance, one news article I read ahead of May 21st labeled him as an evangelical broadcaster. And if you use the term evangelical just as an adjective, a normal adjective, then technically he is evangelizing. That would make him evangelical. However, in the modern use of evangelical, it actually hooks him with evangelicals. And as soon as you do that, I think that, and it might have been USA Today, I could be wrong, I would have gone to USA Today and say, you know, if I had my chance based on the fact that you said he's evangelical, as an evangelical, I would go to him and I would immediately point Harold Camping to Matthew chapter 24, verse 36. Matthew 24, verse 36. And let's look at this together. And I haven't spent much time on Camping's site, but I'm sure the fact is when somebody has a whack theology, they have ways of writing off clear scriptures. So I'm not saying that this would be effective with Mr. Camping, but implicitly, there's an accusation that he is an evangelical broadcaster. And let's look at this. Matthew 24, 36. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. But concerning that day and the hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. Now, in fairness to Mr. Camping, technically, that verse does not say that God will never reveal the date of his return. It clearly, Jesus was talking then and there about the fact that nobody but the Father knew, not even Jesus. However, I personally tend to believe it will remain that way. Has anybody been successful so far? Well, the fact that you're all sitting here means no, right? And many churches have done it, and strangely enough, we can go ahead and list churches that we all agree are off kilter, like, for instance, Jehovah's Witnesses, I believe, thought it was going to go in the 70s. And they came up with their explanation after that. And what I would say, too, is that personally I believe that Jesus himself now knows the date. That Jesus was not saying that he would never know the date. I do think he was kind of indicating we would never know the date. But when Jesus came here, he gave, if you may have heard this expression, he gave up the independent use of his divine powers. So while he was here on earth, he knew what the Father revealed to him. He had the power through the Father, through the Holy Spirit, but he gave up the independent use. So when he says he didn't know it, my personal belief is now that he's returned to the glory in heaven that he had before, that he now knows. Now, the Godhead can still make a choice, and maybe he doesn't. But I would also suggest that if looking at that verse in the section of Scripture that it's in, all we take out of it is you can't know the date and the hour, then we actually are missing a more important point that God is trying to make. Up to that point, if you read ahead of it, Jesus had been revealing signs of the end. Not only the very end, but also more specifically the end of Jerusalem and of the temple. So he had been speaking of both types. And actually, that's why Matthew 24 can get kind of confusing to people, because it does mix in and out. And the same thing, by the way, I believe is true with Revelation, why people get so confused. Because it's talking about, actually, I think it may be talking about three times. It's talking about the end of Jerusalem. It's talking about the end of Rome. And then it's talking about the end of the world. But here in Matthew, he had been talking up to that point about these signs and basically saying, hey, when you see this, be prepared, be prepared. So let's, if you haven't closed, let's go back to where we were. And instead of just reading that verse, we're going to read that verse and we're going to read on a little more, because that verse actually, in my opinion, is a segue to the next point. So we're going to look at Matthew 24, verses 36 through 44. Matthew 24, 36 through 44. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. For as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and given in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark, and they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. So at this point, we are talking about the very end times. Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken and one left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. That's kind of an odd statement if you think about it. He just spent time telling them what the signs would be before his return, and then he tells them, therefore, you better be ready because you're not going to know when I'm going to show up. But it does make sense if you think about it. We humans, we get so caught up in our day-to-day life that we could have an eschatological, love those big words, even if I can't pronounce them, eschatological gun pointed right at our face, and we'll still keep all our attention on our eating and drinking, our marrying and giving in marriage, and the myriad of other activities and entertainments that we allow to fill our lives. Jesus' main point in that "don't you dare set a date" verse was that our end would come upon us unexpectedly. That was the point he was trying to make. I do think it's valid to apply it towards "you can't set a date" too. But his point was, it's going to happen when you don't expect it. And I think, by the way, speaking of the not setting a date, even if you look at that, and the larger biblical theme, that is, of it coming on us unexpectedly, there is no way we can honestly believe that the date is going to be given us. It seems to contradict it. Let's take another reference. Let's look at Paul when he was talking to the Thessalonians, actually echo Jesus' words. So let's look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 1 through 11. And I think that if you listen closely, you'll also hear some interesting words or concepts repeated. Now, concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you have no need to have anything written to you. For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Does that sound familiar? Well, people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. Interesting concept with a pregnant woman, but if you think about it, yes, you know you have about 9 months, but how many women can attest that the baby didn't show up, A, when they wanted him to, and B, when they expected? Unless, of course, they were induced. But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are children of the light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. Actually, we're going to stop there. Jesus said that he would come at an hour we did not expect. And Paul says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. And is any thief worth his metal going to tell you when he's going to arrive? He's going to show up unexpectedly. Now, the good news for us Christians is both implicitly say that even though we won't know exactly when it's going to happen, we can be prepared. Jesus advises, therefore, you must also be ready. He wouldn't say that if we couldn't be. And Paul notes, and this is very important, and the way I read it, I probably didn't make it too obvious, but you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. We are not in darkness. We will not be surprised by that day. We may not know exactly when it's going to come up, but we will not be surprised. I also found it interesting that both Jesus and Paul not only mentioned thievery, but they mentioned drunkenness. Now, when Jesus said, for as in those days before the flood they were eating and drinking, he wasn't technically, definitely saying alcohol. But my guess is he was. And I do realize also that Paul's use is mostly metaphorical when he says, then let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober, for those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. However, drinking is actually a very good transition to the second event that has weighed heavily on my mind this week. And before we discuss that tragedy, I'd like to share a related excerpt written by the famous 16th and 17th century poet. Can you guess what his name is based on the name of the sermon if you actually looked in the bulletin? What's the guy's name? Well, at least you know the last name. What's the last name? Did anybody look at the bulletin this week? Donne, right? John Donne. Although, the verses that I... Well, verses... I guess it's more prose. But the section that I'm going to read to you right now by John Donne, you're actually probably more likely to know it. It's familiar, my guess, to the great majority, maybe not some of the youngins. Who knows what they're teaching you in school today. But it'll be more familiar to you because of Ernest Hemingway, not because of John Donne. Let me go ahead and read it to you. No man is an island, entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manner of thy friends or of thine own were, any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. Familiar words? For whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And those are very ominous words, ones that I couldn't help but thinking this week. And I didn't know that John Donne had written them. I thought it was Hemingway's genius. And with Donne, the only work that I was familiar with was from an English class at Liberty University, and being originally kind of a math person, I took religion there. English is one of the classes you just take because you have to. Anybody else like that? You don't take it because you want to, you take it because you have to. Yes, we know that for a fact, don't we, Mikey? But I will admit that often those humanities classes turn out to be the ones that have the most meaning to me, too, and that I gain the most, because it's where I need the most work. And in this English class, there was a poem by Donne that I'm going to read you that really touched me. It goes like this. Batter my heart, three-person God, for you, as yet but knock, breathe, shine, and seek to mend, that I may rise and stand, overthrow me, and bend. You force to break, blow, burn, and make me new. I, like a usurped town, to another do, labor to admit you, but oh, to no end. Reason, your viscerae in me should defend, but is captivated and proves weak or untrue. But I, yet dearly I love you, and would be loved fain, but I am betrothed unto your enemy. Divorce me, untie, or break that knot again. Take me to you, imprison me, for I, except you enthrall me, never shall be free, never ever chaste, except you ravish me. That's a paradoxical poem, isn't it? Break me to build me kind of thing. It's from his Divine Meditations, and although it doesn't speak directly to our subject today, I think you can see why it became my favorite Christian poem, because you can just, anybody else have that same contest? I mean, we've sold ourselves to the devil, and we want him to give us a divorce, but to do that, he needs to break us, doesn't he? And that is my favorite Christian poem. And I suspect if you think about it, if we allow God to do what John Donne in that poem requests, Jesus' return will not catch us like a thief in the night. We will be awake and sober and prepared. Now, getting back to the subject at hand, I've previously mentioned that ultimately the time of Jesus' return doesn't matter. And I don't mean who cares. What I mean, and I'm going to let James say it because he's going to say it better. So let's turn to James chapter 4, verses 13 through 15. What I mean is when it comes to most all of us on the world today, in everyone who's passed before, the date of Jesus' return is not as important as another fact. So James 4, 13 through 15. We all there? Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. We do not know what tomorrow will bring. We really don't even know what 30 seconds will bring. And this week, how many people, I've only been in Antrim 7 years. Who's been here much longer? Kathleen, how many tornado warnings have there been in Antrim since you lived here? Two? Well, this was my first. And we know, looking at other places, that tornadoes, even in places where they have alarm systems, We don't. Even in places where they have alarm systems can come on you unexpectedly, and in the next 30 seconds, we could all be killed here. Not trying to make you all feel positive thoughts, mind you. We are but a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Which is why we should pray like the psalmist did and ask the Lord to teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. That's Psalm 90:12. Or, O Lord, make me know my end and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. That's Psalm 39, verse 4. And early one morning this week, three 20-somethings climbed into a car. Every indication is that they were not sober. And shortly thereafter, the bell tolled for one of them. As for the other two, they are guaranteed months of painful treatment. And one of them may end up spending a good portion of his or her life in jail. All three of them can attest to the folly of saying, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such town and dot, dot, dot. One life is no more. He will not be going into any town. And the others two have been changed forever, changed initially with an accident they didn't expect, followed by an unplanned and extended stay in the hospital after an unanticipated ride in a helicopter. And although I think a lot of us might like a ride in a helicopter, none of us want that ride. And more than just two lives have been forever changed because, as John Donne rightly noted, no man is an island entire of self. No man is an island entire of itself. All the more true of the family, friends, and community of those three occupants of that demolished car. Any man's death diminishes us because we are involved in mankind. Lord, teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. And considering what transpired this week and the effect it has had on one member of this congregation, it is hard to have this sermon be anything but somber and gloomy. But let's not forget that the man who wrote of "For Whom the Bell Tolls" also pointed to the one who made it so that it really doesn't matter how early or how late in your life it rings, as long as you and I trust him. Additionally, that same Messiah, after already finishing the work of our salvation, has promised to destroy something so that we'll never again have the news like that which arrived Wednesday morning. Now, you can look, don't worry about doing it right now, but if you got your little note out, you can look at Revelation 20, verses 14 and 15, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 24 through 26, that's Revelations 20, 14 through 15, and 1 Corinthians 15, 24 through 26, to see the Bible speak of that destruction. But since I do have, as the title of the sermon says, Donne on the brain, I hope you will allow me to read a little more of John Donne instead. Death, be not proud, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so. For those whom thou think'st thou dost overthrow, die not, poor death, nor yet canst thou kill me. From rest and sleep, which but thy picture be, much pleasure then from thee much more must flow. And soonest our best men with thee do go, rest of their bones and souls' delivery. Thou'rt slave to fate, chance, kings, and desperate men, and dost with poison, war, and sickness dwell, and poppy or charms can make us sleep as well. And better than thy stroke, why swelt'st thou then? One short sleep past, we wake eternally, and death shall be no more. Death, thou shalt die. Death shalt be no more. Death, thou shalt die. Now, I don't know anything really about the man who passed away, but I do know that everyone sitting here who has repented, believed in the Lord Jesus, and been baptized into his body can also laugh at death, because one short sleep past, we wake eternally. That is the good news that we've been given, the honor of sharing with our families, our friends, and our community. But getting back to the somber part, the gospel would be incomplete if we do not also pray, Lord, teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom, for today the bell may toll for us.